Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
It's a great thing to win in the playoffs, all right? It's a great thing to make the playoffs. It's a great thing to come to Pittsburgh and play a football game, okay? It's a great thing to win any playoff game because we know where we're going next.
Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Gillette Stadium.
You are looking live. Well, you're not looking live just yet. It's going to be next week for the Baltimore Ravens against the New England Patriots as they have downed the Pittsburgh Steelers, taking care of business, going against my prediction for the game because I thought it was going to be decided by a field goal in Pittsburgh's honor, and you thought the exact opposite. So, hey, you were wrong, too. The game wasn't even close, Josh. And that audio, by the way, courtesy of BaltimoreRavens.com.
Yeah, well, the Ravens still scored 30 points in the game, to my surprise, because, you know, despite past history against Pittsburgh at Heinz Field in their playoff history, I did not expect a Ravens-Steelers game to be this easy for Baltimore.
No, in Heinz Field, it's the first time they've beaten them in the playoffs in Heinz Field. They avenged a 2008 and a 2010 loss to them in the playoffs. And now you have it to where they move on to New England, where they've had success against the Patriots. As a matter of fact, the year prior to the Super Bowl run, where they beat the Patriots in the AFC Championship, the first one they could have won, but thanks to Lee Evans and Billy Cundiff, that didn't happen. But Joe Flacco outplayed Tom Brady in that game, and now we have it to where he is become Joe Cool in the playoffs. He's Mr. January. He's Mr. February.
January Joe.
January Joe. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, you know what? Get some t-shirts made on that one.
Let's get some t-shirts made for January Joe.
Yeah,
and then let's see if we can get them advertised on radio stations, because all radio stations right now are like, get this new t-shirt right now. You need to buy this t-shirt right now.
Yeah, so before we start off the show, tell us the name of this show, Mr. Atkinson.
You are listening to the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All on sfmsports.net. You can catch us on Facebook at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All podcast, Twitter at bsportsfree, the number 4, all, and Monday Sports Mornings with Josh is Josh's blog. Be on the lookout for that as well. Monday
on Blogger.
On Blogger. So you can also Google it as well. I mean,
exactly. It's the same thing.
It's got a pretty easy way to find where we're at and everything else like that. We're putting ourselves out there. Today on the show, we are talking about, obviously, Ravens and Steelers and giving that a recap because it just has to be talked about, because in Baltimore land, it is definitely a big deal when the Ravens beat the Steelers. It is an even bigger deal when it happens in the playoffs, and an even ultra deal when it happens at Heinz Field. So that will be talked about. We'll be previewing Ravens versus Patriots coming up. Then we're going to be talking about another hot team in Maryland, and that is, well, Maryland.
Both teams, actually.
Yeah. Men and women's basketball is on fire. They're going to lose in the Big Ten. No, they're not. Yeah, we're going to be talking about those guys. We got our two-minute rants coming up, and then we're going to be paying.
Do not forget, though, we got to bring up the BCS. Oh, I'm sorry, the National Championship Tournament in college football.
The Playoff Selection Committee, the PSC.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, the Playoff Selection Committee, so PSC.
Yeah.
I had to think about that one for a second. I'm like, wouldn't it be PCS? I'm like, no, wait, that would be the Playoff Championship Series. Okay, so we'll be talking about that as well, and unfortunately in the sports world, we lost a legend, so we'll be paying our respects to Mr. Stuart Scott, who died of cancer at the age of 49 on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we get to everything here, let's start off with the Ravens' huge 30-17 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers in Heinz Field, their first ever victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the postseason.
Yes. And
define history.
It is quite the history indeed, and the stats can be deceiving on this one because Ben Roethlisberger outpassed Joe Flacco, but there is a key stat here, and that's the fact that Flacco did not throw any interceptions. Roethlisberger threw two, including one in between the knees of Terrell Suggs.
Suggs looked like he was cradling his own baby in his arms, trying to save it from an avalanche by the way he was handling that ball.
He was like, it's not going to hit the ground. I'm not going to trap it. I don't want to trap it. I'm not going to. And lo and behold, he didn't.
I'm surprised there wasn't a Steelers offensive player that saw that and were trying to knock the ball right between his legs.
Ow.
Yeah, that would not have ended well for Mr. Suggs.
That sounds terrible, Josh.
That does sound terrible.
Why even bring that up?
Yeah, I forget. We do have male listeners there. I apologize.
As a matter of fact, males are demographic, so, I mean, you just made...
Theater of the mind. I apologize.
You just made most of our audience cringe, Josh.
I'm sure it won't be the last time, Ray. Let's just be honest with that one. It won't be the last time.
Okay, you were thinking that Philip Supernaw was going to make a difference in this game.
It wasn't Supernaw. It was actually Crockett Gilmore. Is this his first reception of the season? I feel like it is.
No, he's had other receptions before because...
But none of them meant as big as this one.
He's also had an impact on some of the games, but this one, yeah, biggest catch of his young career, Mr. Crockett Gilmore. When they drafted him, I was thinking, wow, there's a household name there for you, Crockett Gilmore. Any relation to Happy?
No, I do think... is he related to either Crockett from Miami Vice, Sonny and Crockett? I don't think so.
Wait. There's somebody also famous named Crockett. I know.
Well, fictional though.
Well, I know. In real life though, Jim Crockett of WCW.
NWA, yeah.
NWA and WCW, yeah. Not Woman Crush Wednesday, World Championship Wrestling, is what our 20-somethings know it as.
Or the famous NWA group that featured Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre from the late 80s, early 90s, not that group.
Well, you can confuse those in our generation because the people, when you say NWA, they're like, Dr. Dre?
Yeah, exactly. Snoop Dogg? Yeah, I remember those guys. Ice Cube? Yeah. Hell yeah.
Not that NWA. The National Wrestling Alliance.
Yeah. But looking at the statistics here, you were right. Roethlisberger outpassed Joe Flacco in this game, but the key stats, obviously, were the two interceptions that Roethlisberger threw. One was to Terrell Suggs. The other was to Darian Stewart, safety Darian Stewart, who had one tackle, one interception. And this was another surprising thing.
A Darian Stewart sighting? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big surprising.
Well, not that, but one key that I listed on our last episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All was Antonio Brown and how the Ravens had to keep him out of the red zone. Well, there was one play where it looked like Antonio Brown was going to score. He caught a big deep ball from Ben Roethlisberger, and it looked like he fell down and scored the touchdown, but his knee was down at the one-yard line. And even though he had, 117 yards for Antonio Brown?
And on 9 receptions, his longest of the day was 44.
That was the play right there, which was overturned by the officials. Eventually, the Steelers did score on the drive, but they did keep him out of the end zone. They did keep him scoreless in that game. And despite the yardage there, that was a huge factor in that game.
The refs. It's the refs, man. Oh, the refs are colluding against the Ravens.
That's going to be my two-minute rant right there.
Yeah. Oh, they're colluding against the Ravens. We've got an inferiority complex of epic proportions right here. No, here's the reason why the Baltimore Ravens won big time. Big key statistic right here is I like to look at one big statistic as what you want to look at as the reason why they won this football game. 2 penalties, 14 yards.
And we can name 2 of those penalties for you right there.
Okay, go right ahead.
Well, there was the one penalty, I believe it was in the first half, where there were 12 men on the field on a 4th down play where they stopped the Steelers. And, of course, that's a boneheaded move. Anybody, you know, every team does that once in a while, I suppose. But I guess it's just being ill-prepared.
Especially, you know, considering John Harbaugh's special teams background. Can we just stop talking about head coaches' backgrounds? They were offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators.
Brian Billick is an offensive genius.
Yeah, so much for that. And
Marvin Lewis is an defensive genius.
Yeah, so much for all of that. Rex Ryan, defensive genius? Well,
you can make an argument a little bit.
The Jets did play well defensively during his tenure. It was mainly Mark Sanchez in every other part of that system that was just completely broken that would cause the Jets to fail under Rex Ryan. Interesting to see where he goes next.
But I mean, back to that penalty, though, the 12-man penalty. Already extra player on the field.
Yeah, an extra player on the field. So it culminates in a first down. You think it would cost the Ravens big time, but, I mean,
didn't really.
Not really so much. It. And also, you can name the other penalty. That was an offside, I believe.
Offside in the second half, which I'm shocked that they're, you know, compared to their last meeting, which was a Sunday night football game in Pittsburgh, there were so many penalties from the Ravens. It was unbelievable. And most of them were on defense. 2 defensive penalties, and both of them, one was ill-prepared, and the other was just common.
Yeah.
So
And you look on the other side of the football in Pittsburgh, 8 penalties for 114 yards. They give up an entire football field in penalties. When you do that, you're going to lose.
And what's surprising there is, despite the penalties and despite the 5 sacks that Pittsburgh allowed to the Baltimore Ravens defense, they still had over 35 minutes of time of possession compared to the Ravens over 24.
Yeah, and you could say that that's a battle of field position right there. The Ravens clearly won that. Justin Tucker again with 3 field goals. And
that was
money.
Another key from the last episode. Keep them in safe distance.
Yes, sir. And it was Tucker actually made one, though, over his safe distance, over 49 yards. It was a 52-yard field goal that he made, and he scored 12 points for the Ravens, 9 on field goals and 3 on extra points. Where on the other side of the ball, Pittsburgh had to settle for field goals, whereas Baltimore was using them to pad their lead. So you had it to where Joe Flacco also had 2 passing touchdowns. Roethlisberger had 1, and you think about it that way. Pittsburgh settling for field goals, Baltimore padding their lead with field goals. It was just a complete dominant performance by the Baltimore Ravens against the Pittsburgh Steelers, something that we're just in shock by and something that took everybody by surprise. Nobody called that. I thought it was just going to be a close game and going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight. Of course, I was predicting it to be in Pittsburgh's favor. But one thing about the Baltimore Ravens, they don't lose in the wild card round.
No, absolutely not. Undefeated in the wild card round, I believe, and under the tenure or the guidance of John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco at the helm at quarterback. And looking back at Flacco, yeah, he had 2 touchdowns, a 114 quarterback rating, was only sacked 1 time. Did have a fumble, but fortunately it was recovered by Jeremy Zuda and it kept the drive alive. Looking at the other offensive stars, Justin Forsett didn't really have a good game on the running attack there.
And he also had the 1 turnover for the Baltimore Ravens,
yeah.
And that was a little shocker to look at, and you're thinking to yourself, huh, well, Ray Rice doesn't fumble, and then in the playoffs he does start fumbling. Hopefully the same thing doesn't happen to Justin Forsett, because Justin Forsett does not fumble either. And Bernard Pierce sighting.
Yeah, one carry, 5 yards, 1 touchdown. That's it. That was his workload.
Yeah, but it was enough to do what you need to do. How about that for a job? You come in for 1 play in the playoffs, and you score a touchdown on a 5-yard run.
So he was kind of like Fred Jackson is with the Bills, pretty much. Just comes in during the red zone opportunities, scores, boom, you're done.
Yeah.
I got my fantasy points for you for today. You're welcome.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I've done my job. I'm sitting down, and give me a call when it's 5 o'clock.
Yep, and going to the wide receiver side, or receiver side, another key to the game that I listed last week, and I guess you could say I'm accurate on, tight end Owen Daniels, 4 receptions for 70 yards. And a couple of those were first down plays right there.
You're wrong, though, on Supernall, though.
I was wrong on Supernall. Crockett Gilmore was the replacement. Okay, yeah.
I get that, though, because at the same time, I'm still going to give you credit for that one, Josh, because it was somebody who you didn't expect to step up for the Baltimore Ravens, because you were saying Philip Supernall, because he's not really somebody who you think about when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, neither is Crockett Gilmore.
But neither is Crockett Gilmore. He's also not really that big of a household name, so he was a guy that was an unsung hero. He came in, and he made a difference for the Baltimore Ravens on a 21-yard touchdown catch. And so, therefore, I'm going to give you credit for that prediction, Mr. Hall. It wasn't super null, but it was Crockett Gilmore.
So I get half credit?
Yeah, I'll give you half credit for that one.
There you go, half credit.
I grade on a bell curve here.
Yep. Steve Smith stepping up once again. 5 receptions, 101 yards, and once again,
still got a little bit of pep in his step.
Yep, at the ripe old age of 35. And Torrey Smith, 2 catches for 28 yards, but fortunately, one of those catches was a big one, a touchdown, where Joe Flacco showed some mobility.
Yeah, and Torrey Smith continues his career.
I'm getting
again,
a bad feeling about him, man.
By the purple and black. I mean, he's probably going to walk in the offseason. So
you don't want to think about that.
This
right
guy
now
is punching his ticket to a big contract. This is his time to step up. So
touchdowns pay.
But hey, if they get another Super Bowl out of it and he walks to another team, you could probably say it was worth it.
Yeah, you could say. And, you know, hey, Torrey, thank you for everything. And if you ever want to come back when you're 33, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah, because Maryland alum, Baltimore Raven player.
He well does, loved, very respected.
And he does well for the Baltimore Ravens. That is a dream scenario for a football fan, especially a Maryland local football fan. When you actually watch the college team and you see a guy in college and you grow attached to the guy. Torrey Smith was really good for Danny O'Brien And also, I think C.J. – no, not C.J. Brown. He didn't throw to him. I think it was just Danny O'Brien who made –
No, C.J. Brown was there getting his law degree.
Danny O'Brien was the one who made his living off of Torrey Smith. It was just every time listening to the Terrapin Sports Radio Network, I would hear a highlight by Johnny Holiday, and he would say, here's Torrey Smith, another catch from Danny O'Brien, and he's gone. And it's just, wow, this kid might do something special in the NFL, unlike Darius Hayward Bay, who I think Torrey Smith is miles above Hayward Bay.
I agree on that
100%. And Torrey Smith here, so he is a Maryland guy. He enters the NFL draft.
Second rounder
to the Baltimore Ravens, and you're thinking to yourself, wow, this is a Maryland guy, and he's playing for a Baltimore Maryland team. That's a dream scenario for a guy, and he's actually really, really good. And that's, as a football fan, you couldn't ask for anything more in terms of following your local team.
And not to cut you off here, but there was one statistic that I think stood out more than anything, that he had over 10 touchdowns at the end of the season. But you also got to keep in mind, yeah, he only had over 700 yards, but he had a very slow start to 2014. And he had, week five to catch up on the yardage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was week five when he finally got out of the doldrums. I remember we were saying, hey, look, it's a Torrey Smith sighting.
Yeah, and now we're not really saying that anymore. Now we're saying, wow, Torrey Smith, the red zone threat. Now, moving from offense to defense, what a big night by the Ravens linebacking core. Let's start off with your interior linebackers, Darryl Smith and C.J. Mosley. C.J. Mosley, his first playoff game, I was impressed. 9 tackles in the game. Darryl Smith, the crazy, wily veteran, 10 tackles, 2 forced fumbles.
Yeah.
Former Jaguar, current Raven, 32 years of age.
Yeah, when you see a guy force 2 fumbles on defense, you're balling on
Absolutely.
Defense. You're a boss on defense, and Darryl Smith was a boss in this game. In addition to him, I mean, even Ladarius Webb had 8 tackles in this game. Where'd that come from?
Well, that was mostly Ben Roethlisberger's stat padding, I think, caused all that. And, of course, you look at Haloti Ngata, 2 tackles. His first game back after the 4-game suspension, 2 tackles and 1 sack on Ben Roethlisberger. Elvis Dumerville, going back to the linebacking core, 3 tackles, 2 sacks for Mr. Doom.
Courtney Upshaw. There's a name we haven't called too much this year.
What? When was the last time we heard that name? What, 3 years ago? It feels like 3 years ago.
3 years ago when he was drafted?
Yeah.
Is that the last time we heard the name of Courtney Upshaw?
Way to go, Courtney. You finally stood up.
He did step up. He had a sack himself. 2 tackles on 1 sack. Let me see here. I think another guy had a sack. It was we've covered Dumerville. We've covered Ngata.
Covered Upshaw.
We've covered Upshaw.
Terrell Suggs.
But wait, no. Brandon Williams.
Yeah, he got a sack.
Brandon Williams had a sack.
Yeah, absolutely. And that
Suggs did not have a sack. Suggs had that interception between his legs.
You know what? Roethlisberger, I'm sure, during that game, because we've heard Suggs say many times, and I quote,
his soul may belong to God, but his ass belongs to me.
And I'm sure when Roethlisberger, before he threw that pick, he was thinking to himself, well, yeah, I know we're losing. We still have a chance. At least Suggs hasn't gotten in my head yet. At least he hasn't gotten in my head yet.
Oh.
No! Damn you, Terrell Suggs. Damn you, number 55.
Oh. You maniacs. You blew it up.
And Orioles center fielder Adam Jones won a Twitter bet with Pirates center fielder Andrew McCutchen. So.
Yep, and so Andrew McCutchen will now have to rock a Terrell Suggs jersey to a Pirates home game. That's going to go over pretty well, don't you think?
No, it's not.
I will say this, though. Thank you for the Pittsburgh Pirates for being relevant in baseball again.
Yes, otherwise nobody would have cared about this story.
Because you have the Baltimore...
Same with the Orioles.
Yeah, you have the Baltimore-Pittsburgh rivalry in football, but you didn't have that in baseball for the longest time. You had it in the World Series. Many, many years ago.
And I'm sure many Baltimoreans would like to forget about that.
Oh, yes, they would. The Pittsburgh Pirates. Oh, you Pirates. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, both teams just fell off the wayside and were competing with how many consecutive years of losing can we have before one gets trumped by the other? And you know what? If the Pirates did have a winning season, it would have been the Orioles that had the longest streak of losing seasons. But lo and behold, both streaks were snapped. And now we can start anew here in terms of the Baltimore-Pittsburgh rivalry. Maybe we can carry it over to baseball, as Adam Jones has gotten to a Twitter bet with Andrew McCutchen. And now Mr. McCutchen now has to wear a Terrell Suggs jersey to a Pittsburgh home game.
And there's your weekly Orioles talk right there from the Baltimore Sports free-for-all.
Because they did nothing again.
But getting back
they're probably not going to do anything until spring training.
But getting back to the Ravens, 30-17 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their 10th win under John Harbaugh. The Ravens 10-4 in the playoffs under John Harbaugh. Joe Flacco achieved his fifth straight game with a passer rating of over 100. Yeah, 400. That's like
wow.
Universal.
That's a juggernaut.
Yeah, Flacco.
That's godly.
He achieves his fifth straight postseason game with a passer rating over 100 or more. You know who are the only two quarterbacks to achieve that feat?
I'm gonna go with Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And Brady.
Nope.
Okay.
Joe Montana and Troy Aikman.
Ooh.
That is good company right there.
That is
there.
Very good company to stand with. You said the Ravens are 10-4 under John Harbaugh in
and
the playoffs.
Joe Flacco has 10 wins, of course. So.
So if they played a full season in the playoffs, they clinched a playoff berth from the playoffs.
I'm sure if they were in the if they played the playoffs in a regular season, I'm sure they'd be pretty damn good every year from
yeah.
the looks of it. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're 10-4 right now under John Harbaugh. So the worst they can be in a regular season is 10-6. That gets you in the playoffs.
Yeah, and in response to a guy named Eddie on Facebook who said, "Hey, Andy Dalton's went through four straight playoff appearances. He's got to be pretty good, huh?" And no, he hasn't won a game yet.
No, he's become the Matt Ryan of the AFC.
No, he's becoming the scapegoat for his big contract with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, did I just take a shot at Mr. Matt Ryan, considering everybody wants to make the comparisons to Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan?
Is that still an argument right now?
It really should not be anymore.
It shouldn't be. Okay, yeah, Matt Ryan, we get it. He's a fantasy darling. He's got two Pro Bowls. And how many home playoff games have he and the Atlanta Falcons blown? Enough. He's blown enough.
This is what puts the argument to bed right here. Joe Flacco has as many Super Bowl wins as Matt Ryan has playoff wins.
Ouch.
One.
Ouch.
One playoff win for Matty Ice.
Yeah.
Matty Ice is melted.
And he still has Roddy White and Julio Jones, and Flacco has Steve Smith and Torrey Smith.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you take and, oh, yeah, by the way, Matt Ryan had Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez for a few years, too.
Yeah, for a few years and was still good for yes. a few years, Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah.
So he had all those guys on offense. He even had, I think, Michael Turner there for a little bit.
He had a lot of former Pro Bowl running backs, Steven Jackson, Michael Turner. Yeah.
He had Michael Turner when he was still Michael the Burner Turner and was somewhat decent until he fell off the wayside.
It just seems to be that whenever running backs go to Atlanta, that's where their careers go to die.
Who was the one running back, though, that was there for the longest time?
Snelling?
Not Snelling. It was a little bit before in the 90s. What is his name? I'm trying to remember.
Warwick Dunn.
No, that's not. No, that was the mid 2000s. And when I think of Warwick Dunn, I don't think about Warwick Dunn for the Atlanta Falcons. I think about Warwick Dunn in the Buccaneers because him running behind Mike Allstott.
Yeah,
that was quite a tandem that team had. You had Keyshawn Johnson as the wide receiver,
and not to mention you had Keenan McCardell, who's also an assistant coach for Maryland's football team.
Jamal Anderson.
That's
what I'm thinking of right
okay,
here.
There
he was
you
the
go.
One who had, it was you know somewhat consistent for Atlanta and stayed yep. with them for a couple years. And that was also in the Chris Chandler years before Michael Vick took the helm.
LaRon McClain didn't go to the Falcons, did he? I don't think he did. I think he went to the Chiefs, but. Nonetheless, moving on, forget about the past, forget about players for the Falcons, former running backs for the Ravens that could have played for the Falcons. The Ravens go to Foxborough on Saturday, January 10th, against the New England Patriots.
LaRon McClain, by the way, doesn't have a job.
Yeah.
He's a free agent.
Yep. And he was in that running back tandem with him, Willis McGahee, and Ray Rice, rookie Ray Rice.
Yeah, so McClain's last tenure was with the San Diego Chargers, and he was released on March.
Ooh.
So he stayed with them for a good 2 years. He was with the Chiefs before, after he left his Ravens tenure. And you remember Willis McGahee. Man, there's a guy who hasn't been the same since he got jacked up by Ryan Clark in that 2008 AFC Championship game.
Yeah, but you also got to mention, too, that Willis McGahee wasn't the same player when he suffered that horrific knee injury when he was at the University of Miami.
No, he wasn't. He was a Heisman candidate. I think he lost out to Carson Palmer.
Yeah. So, looking at this AFC divisional round matchup with the Ravens and the Patriots on January the 10th on a Saturday, Let's look at regular season stats. Let's look at all together stats here, regular season and postseason. We know regular season doesn't matter, but nonetheless, the Patriots all-time versus Baltimore. This is including Tom Brady and Drew Bledsoe. 8-3 all-time versus Baltimore. 6-3 under the helm with Tom Brady. Now, this is where we flip the script. The Baltimore Ravens are 2-1 versus the New England Patriots in the postseason. Their first win being just a complete blowout.
It was a complete blowout. I remember that too.
Joe Flacco didn't even have 100. He didn't even have 50 yards in that game.
I remember
4 for 10, 34 yards.
I remember you were talking about that with a roommate that you used to live with that was a Patriots fan, and he was
He was a conflicted Redskins Patriots fan. Let's just put it that way.
How do you do that?
I don't know how you
do that. How do you go between two of those teams?
Well, he was a conflicted Cardinals and Orioles fan for a bit, but since the Orioles have been on the right track, he's kind of rekindled his love.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the last two meetings that Joe Flacco has had with Tom Brady. He's completed 59.8% of passes. He had 546 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. Whereas Brady has had 559 yards as well, so he got him on that one. But he's got 1 touchdown and 4 interceptions.
Yeah. So
in the last two meetings with the Baltimore Ravens.
So Flacco in the postseason averages 57% completion, 193 passing yards versus New England in the postseason. Now, you have to take these two things in effect. Number one, that's on average. And number two, the first game, Joe Flacco only completed 4 for 10 for 34 yards when he really didn't have to pass in that game. So you can kind of chuck those stats out the window because we think Mr. Flacco is probably going to throw for well over that.
Yeah, and you consider that the fact that the Ravens are 2-1 against the Patriots in the postseason, it could have easily been 3-0. Lee Evans and Billy Cundiff be damned.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to put more of the burden on Lee Evans. Ah, where did he go nowadays?
Oh, I think he went to the Canadian Football League. But then again, I say that about everybody. Where are they now? Canadian Football League, Arena Football League, International Football League. Oh, wait, no, that doesn't exist. So
it's a former American football wide receiver. He was drafted by the Buffalo Bills, obviously. Lee Evans looks like another guy going to Canadian football and then falling by the wayside. He did go to the Jaguars for a year in 2012 after a little bit, but he was a practice squad member. That was it. He went from the Baltimore Ravens AFC Championship, could have had the catch of his life, and that could have set him for life. But instead, he goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars on the practice squad and never to be heard from again.
See, David Tyree had the catch of a lifetime in the 2008 Super Bowl. This is when the Patriots are going for their undefeated record. After that, it doesn't matter if he was on a one-year deal. He could have had any job with any NFL team. Unfortunately, injury sidelined the guy.
And I just remember the David Tyree catch off the helmet. And maybe if Lee Evans would have had that, he would have stayed in the league just a little bit longer.
Maybe for another year.
When you get cut by the Jacksonville Jaguars off the practice squad,
it's over.
It's over.
Yeah, it's over.
Just call it a day, man.
Yep, exactly. And another stats that don't matter from the 2014 regular season, the Patriots had the 11th best NFL offense in 2014, averaging 365.5 total yards of offense.
You know who had the second best offense in the league?
Who?
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
And where are they now?
Home.
With the Cincinnati Bengals on a couch.
Yep, that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Two teams in the AFC North that were better than the Ravens after the 2014 regular season.
Gone completely. We were saying, wow, look at the AFC North. They put 3 guys in the playoffs, and then there was only one.
Baltimore.
Yep.
The team, me and Ray, will admit, least expected to come out of that pile.
Yeah, but at the same time, the playoffs are a different season, Josh. It's
absolutely
called the postseason. It's not the regular season. It is the postseason. You get in, you're in. So it becomes a fresh slate, clean, even though I'm sure the Ravens would like to have a little bit of more of a padding in secondary, but they got to work with what they got to work with. I'm glad to see Darian Stewart step up for the Baltimore Ravens.
Absolutely.
He's a guy in Ladarius Webb that have to really carry this secondary and let everybody else behind him. Did you, who's that one guy that had a headshot in the game? Was it Levine?
I think it might have been Rashawn Melvin, I think.
Oh, it was Melvin. It was Melvin. Yeah.
He's stepping up in quarterback, too, and this is a guy who was pretty much a walk-on to the practice squad.
That was amazing, though, is that he goes after the head of a wide receiver. He gets dinged up. He's the one that's slow to get up, and the penalty flag is on him.
And this may be a teaser for...
Insult to injury.
Yeah, and this may be a teaser for a future episode since we brought up Torrey Smith's name. Another guy who I think could end up being gone is Dean Pease, defensive coordinator. Especially what he've had to work with this year.
Well, considering the Ravens' history in replacing defensive coordinators, you know.
He's the next guy up, I guess.
Yeah, what they get with after Marvin Lewis left? Was it Mike Nolan?
Marvin Lewis, Mike Nolan, I think Madison.
And then
Greg Madison.
No, it was Rex Ryan before Greg Madison.
No, Rex Ryan was after Madison.
I thought he was before.
No, because Ryan, I believe, was a... because Madison went to Michigan, remember? And then Ryan took over as defensive coordinator. He was supposed to be the next guy up as the head coach. And then Harbaugh came in, and then Ryan just gave him that mean mug and look like, okay, you know what? I'll just stick with it for one more year, and then I'm going to go, you rotten son of a... And then...
I could have swore it was Greg Madison that replaced Rex Ryan in Baltimore. Yeah.
And the Patriots defense, speaking of defense, the 13th...
And it was.
The 13th best defense in the National Football League in 2014, 344.1 yards against. So, looking at what we know right now about the New England Patriots, yeah, we get it. Tom Brady has 3 Super Bowl rings, so does Bill Belichick. But Tom Brady's lost 2 Super Bowls since that time, which seems like... You know, eons ago,
and it's post-Spygate.
Yes, post-Spygate indeed.
So what if they never got caught with that?
Probably would have had 6 Super Bowls.
Ugh.
I know.
Wow.
And we would have lived in a never-ending world of Brady-isms and Belichick-isms and all kinds of unfortunate Foxborough-isms.
Everybody would be wearing Bill Belichick hoodies with the sweatband.
Cut-off sleeves.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Prediction time, Mr. Atkinson. Ravens are 2-1 all time versus the New England Patriots. Joe Flacco has pretty good statistics career-wise against the New England Patriots. Do the Baltimore Ravens advance to their 4th AFC Championship game under the Harbaugh Flacco regime, or do we call it a night for the Baltimore Ravens?
Well, I did it last week by calling it a night for the Baltimore Ravens, and I was wrong. No, I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, though, with their record against the Patriots in the postseason, the way Joe Flacco has played in the postseason, something just lights inside of him that makes him become, you know, Mr. Clutch. He becomes a Raul Ibanez, so to speak. Oh, why'd I have to bring that name up? Oh, bad memories. Repressing in 5. And repressed. Okay, I'm looking at the weather in Foxborough. It's going to be 59 degrees.
Unseasonably warm.
With a little bit of rain added in.
That's going to be a little sloppy.
So you kind of lose the cold weather advantage of the north in Foxborough. It's not going to be your standard run-of-the-mill winter game playoff for Foxborough in the snow.
But we have seen weather predictions gone awry. We have seen temperatures dip below their expectations. So, folks, this is a week from now, so anything can happen at this point.
That it can. So let us see what exactly the weather is going to entail. So I got to give the nod to the team that plays well on the road in the playoffs. That would be the Baltimore Ravens, 10-5 on the road. Ah, yeah, this is a tough one. This is what's the good thing about the playoffs, is that we can be right or we can be wrong, and nobody will really chastise us too much for it, because that's the thing about the playoffs. There are people who want to call Arizona over Carolina, who said Carolina had no business being there, but at the same time, Carolina won their game against Arizona, which you and I both predicted that, and they are now able to advance at the team that is really, you would think, wouldn't be there right now, but they are, and it's a different beast in the postseason. Prediction. I've been beating around this. I'm trying to think out loud here as to how I think this game will go. Considering the fact that the weather is going to be unseasonably warm, I got to go with offense here, and I think it's going to be another offensive slugfest. I will go Ravens 27, Patriots 24.
Wow. So the Ravens go to their fourth AFC championship game, according to Ray Atkinson. Now, let me tell you my side of the story.
Hey, the other Harbaugh did it.
Yeah. And, oh, by the way, the other Harbaugh was with John Harbaugh on the sideline wearing Ravens gear. Well, I guess when you're no longer affiliated with an NFL team.
You'd be like, hey, whatever. I'm giving some support to my brother now.
Yeah, hey, why not? I get some free gear out of it. Yeah.
My brother is a Super Bowl champion, and he beat me.
Yeah, I got a free hoodie out of it. I lost in Super Bowl 47, and all I got was this lousy Ravens hoodie.
Hey, here's a life advice here. Never turn down free stuff.
Exactly. So, quick story time here, folks. I normally do not believe in superstitions. For example, I've walked under ladders all the time. Heck, I've broken a mirror one time. Didn't get 7 years of bad luck. Until I went to a holiday party, and an elderly gentleman gave me a Baltimore Ravens hat. It wasn't anything special, but the one thing he told me, and this was before the Ravens' Week 17 matchup against the Browns, he told me, quote, you can have this hat. The Ravens aren't going anywhere. They've been playing like crap the last couple weeks, yada, yada, yada. So, once the Ravens made the postseason, I decided on the night the Ravens played the Pittsburgh Steelers, I was going to wear the hat. I wear the hat. Heck, and for one night, I believed in superstitions. I grabbed the hat, the brim of the hat, give it a quite tug once in a while, and some good things have been happening for the Ravens. So, out of the tradition of believing in superstition, I'm going to wear the hat once again on a Saturday where the Ravens take on the Patriots, where we both know, me and Ray and you, the listeners, we all know that the Ravens and the Patriots are not going to make it easy on your hearts. Your hearts are going to drop. There are going to be some moments where you feel like you're going to faint. But in the end, I believe hometown superstition for Baltimore will prevail. And the Ravens win this game 26-20. And they go to their fourth AFC championship game.
All right, how about that? So the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All has the Ravens penned in to advance their fourth AFC championship game. And what can we say? I mean, you're the home guy here. I'm more of the neutral type guy. And I'm even saying that they
I was going with superstition, though. I picked against the Ravens a few times this year.
You just got to throw stats and everything like that out the window. You just got to go with playoff success and what everybody else does. And Joe Flacco's got the resume to prove it.
He's got the hot hand.
John Harbaugh's got the resume to prove it. Steve Smith has shown that he still has a little bit of pep in his step. He hasn't lost it at 35. And we thought he was going to be slowing down in the season, but no. He's come out and he's resurged as a player. Torrey Smith, you know, being able to do what he does. He's in a contract year to where he wants to get paid. So he's going to be having a little bit of extra motivation. And ultimately, your performance in the playoffs affects how you get paid. Look at Joe Flacco. Look at the contract he got after winning the Super Bowl. And the way he performed in the playoffs and everything like that. Deservedly so, Super Bowl MVP. Not the guy that was controlling the lights or anything like that. Not Jacoby Jones. Even though Jacoby Jones, if the lights didn't go out, that was the dagger.
I think Beyonce was responsible for that anyways. But
yeah, it made me think that her little light halftime show overloaded the grid a little bit. Even though that boggles my mind that that can overload the grid in the Louisiana Superdome, considering how many events they put on a year, how many events, everything like that. And that was the one thing that overloaded the grid was a Beyonce halftime show.
A show that had millions of dollars invested in it.
That was also pre-recorded, so yeah. I can't think that would be the cause.
Yeah.
Have they still not figured out what was the sole cause of that power outage yet in Louisiana 2 years ago?
I think they were too busy counting their money from that whole ordeal, and I don't think they care one bit. And personally, it's past history. But before we get to the AFC Championship, before we get to the Super Bowl, and, well, Pro Bowl, before the Super Bowl, but who wants to hear about that?
The Pro Bowl?
Yeah, the Pro
Bowl. Are we going to be talking about the Pro Bowl and the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All? I hope not.
I hope not, but moving from professional sports to collegiate sports, the Maryland Terrapins men's and women's basketball teams, both ranked in the top 15 in the national rankings, both had some success this week in Big Ten competition. Let's start with the men here, Ray. They go to Breslin Center in East Lansing, Michigan, to take on Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans.
And you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is the Terps.
This could be an upset.
This is going to be the no. Actually, I was thinking to myself, okay, this is going to be the Terps' second loss because nobody goes into Michigan State on their debut year in the Big Ten and wins against Michigan State. But Maryland did, and it took two overtimes to do it.
Yeah, and this was a game where their three-point shooting percentage was just completely horrid. 4 for 22, 18.2% of their three-point shots made. And even their field goal percentage was down 33.3%. This was a very tough defensive battle. However, their free throw percentage was still stout, 81.3%. There was a key play at the end of the second half where guard Des Wells, coming off of an injury, getting back into the thick of things.
First game back.
Shot a three-point shot to tie the game and take the Maryland Terrapins into overtime. Des Wells, by the way, ended up with 16 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists, and 2 steals to credit.
He's back.
He is back indeed.
This Maryland team was already good without him, and now all of a sudden you bring in Des Wells into the equation, and oh boy, what is this team going to do next?
And we bring him up because he's good. The freshman guard, Milo Trimble, had 17 points, 1 steal, 3 assists, 3 rebounds, and, oh yeah, was 12 for 14 from the free throw line, and that definitely helped the cause for the Terrapins.
Yes, sir, it did. Then they go on to play the Minnesota Golden Gophers at home, and they take care of business in that game, 70-58. It was close at the end of the half. Maryland was up by 3, but then they ran away with it and scored 8 more points than Minnesota in the second half. And now 14-1 are the Terps, and they are 2-0, a big goose egg in their first two games in the Big Ten.
Did anybody predict that? Because they're going to lose in the Big Ten. They're making a mistake. They're going to get their ass kicked in the Big Ten.
Nobody expected forward Damonte Dodd to have 9 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists. And
Michigan State's having a down year.
Oh, my goodness.
Le'Veon Bell didn't play for the Steelers. That's why the Ravens won.
Don't give away my 2-minute rant. Yeah, looking at Maryland and what they've done so far in Big Ten play, granted both of the teams they played weren't nationally ranked according to the top 25, they have still been putting up productive outings. Granted, the first game against Michigan State was more of a defensive battle than anything. The Maryland Terrapins' offense against Minnesota at home was once again pretty stout. The only difference being their three-point shooting was better, their field goal shooting was better, but their free throws were down. 71.4% total free throws made in that game. That has to improve if you're at home, Ray, especially at the Comcast Center.
Yes, sir. And the way that they go, Xfinity Center now, sir.
Same deal.
I mean, but you have the same problem that I have with stadium names is that I never called it First Mariner Arena. I called it Baltimore Arena.
Or if you're an old timer, they call it the Civic Center.
They all call it the Civic Center, but I don't ever remember it being called the Civic Center because I was born in 1987, so I've always known it to be known as the Baltimore Arena. I remember watching the 1994 King of the Ring at Baltimore Arena, Super Brawl 5. Power Rangers Live.
Was that King of the Ring? Was that with Art Donovan?
That was Art Donovan.
I will always remember that. Macho Man kept telling him to hold his hand. Everything will be all right. Yeah, he definitely needed it that night.
Yeah, because luckily I didn't have to hear the commentary. I was watching it live.
How much does this guy weigh?
So it was
Rest in peace, Art.
Yeah, the 1994 King of the Ring, Super Brawl 5. I've seen many Disney on Ices at Baltimore Arena, Monster Jam, Supercross, Arena Cross, and Power Rangers Live.
Yeah. Who has impressed you so far with the Maryland Terrapins? In my eyes, obviously, it's got to be the freshman Melo Trimble. And even though we live in the era where, unfortunately, college basketball players don't want to stick it out for 3 to 4 years anymore, the way this kid's been playing, it seems like he's going to go straight to the NBA, especially if he's a lottery pick.
All right, then, Mr. Mark Turgeon, go get another Melo Trimble. That's what you do in college basketball.
I know, but I hate that tradition, honestly. It seems like I call it the Kentucky way, because Calipari, whenever he seems to pick up these blue chipper recruits and brings them in during their freshman year, that's it. That's all you hear. That's all you hear about him. That's all you hear right there. That's the last you hear of him. I hope this isn't the case with Melo Trimble. If he does stick around, that'd be great for Maryland in their future. We know what Jake Lehman does. We know what Des Wells can do. Damonte Dodd has been impressing me greatly, and I do like Evan Smotrich. The one I keep my eye on is Mikhail Tchaikovsky, the forward, because I think if he can get acquainted more with American basketball, I think he's got a future.
Yeah, kind of like Alex Len, even though it seemed like he wasn't ready for the NBA when he decided to declare for the NBA. Ultimately, I think he made a decent decision, but he could have stayed another year for Maryland. But looking at Maryland's schedule going forward, They'll be playing the Fighting Illini of Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, and then Michigan State again. All of those games, Maryland could easily get out of this stretch at 18-1 and be 6-0 in the Big Ten.
You would have to think if, say, some of the top 10 teams lose, that could easily put you in the top 5 spot when it's all said and done. Granted, yeah. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We still have a long ways away before March Madness.
Yeah, Illinois, they're going to be playing at Illinois. That game's going to be a little bit tough, but Illinois is at 10-5. Purdue is at 10-5. Then let's look at Rutgers. They are 9-6. And Michigan State, who they just beat, is 9-5. So everybody's going to have this very similar records, but Maryland has trumped all of those teams in terms of record. They can easily beat all 5 of these teams, and you could have yourself all 4 of these teams, and have yourself a merry little Christmas going at Indiana, and that's going to be a matchup because the Hoosiers right now are being the Indiana Hoosiers. They're 11-3, and it's going to be a little bit of a stretch here, but 4 games are winnable.
Absolutely.
Very winnable.
And speaking of winnable, moving from Mark Turgeon's surprising men's basketball team to a team we've been accustomed to at College Park, Brenda Freeze's women's team. 11-2 on the year is Brenda Freeze's Lady Terps, and going into their first game from this past week, facing Ohio State at College Park, Maryland won 87-78 over the Buckeyes. The top player from that game was the center Brianna Jones, who had 23 points, 14 rebounds, and 4 blocks in that game. That's Brittany Griner-esque almost, it seems.
And you look at the women's TV schedule, they're getting some exposure here right now because they're on Big Ten Network.
Because they're good.
And ESPN2 and CBS Sports Network. I mean, they're on these networks now to where they're easily able to be watched instead of having to, log on to my little computer, get on this little app site that I have to register for and make sure I enter in my cable company, my cable provider, and then have to select through a swatch of games until I finally can see Maryland women's on my computer. And I'm thinking to myself, and it's all choppy when you get it up and you're getting the B-team commentary. And you're thinking to yourself, what can we do here? I'd rather listen to Matt Noble on the women's broadcast.
And Brenda Freeze and her Lady Terps this past Saturday went to travel to Pinnacle Bank Arena in Lincoln, Nebraska to take on the Nebraska Cornhuskers in a matchup where they were facing the then number 12 Nebraska. You were thinking to yourself, this could be a tough loss for the Lady Terps, but that was the complete opposite. Maryland wallops Nebraska 75-47. The guard Shatari Walker Kimbrough had an outstanding game, 24 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 steals, and 2 blocks in this game. And not to mention, Maryland's team shooting percentage from the field goal range, 51.7% of their shots made. This is a good season so far for the men and women. They seem to have their ups and downs in certain statistical areas, but at the end of the day, they seem to thrive in one part where it just helps them out at the end of the game. It helps out in the outcome.
It seems like this year, this is a Maryland team that has the same swagger as the early 2000 Maryland teams under Gary Williams, where you had Juan Dixon, Lonnie Baxter, and a whole messload of other players, Drew Nicholas. There was another guy. I know it's Juan Dixon and Lonnie Baxter.
Steve Blake,
but who was the other guy? Yeah, Cornrows.
Oh, I don't know.
See, I'm already blanking on his name.
See, you just did that to me right there because I'm sure there were 3 guys who had that hairstyle with Gary Williams' team. Mel Trimble kind of has the fade a little bit. He has that going on, I believe, but
it wasn't Byron Mouton. He was on the team. And it wasn't
remember Bombali Osby, though. He had a shirt named after him, too, and that was I think that was a season where they had Gravis Vasquez, where they were slated to go to the tournament, and it just didn't happen. They kind of faltered down the end in the ACC tournament. But, yeah, looking at the teams now, the way they are set up, Ray, I think we need to start getting notes together for March Madness because it looks like both teams are more than qualified for that tournament.
That they are, and we're going to be talking about this leading up to baseball season. So I am quite liking the fact that the Maryland Terrapins are doing what they're doing.
That it's relevant again.
That they're relevant again, and they are proving every single person who said that the Big Ten move was a bad move.
Gonna get their ass kicked.
Taj Holden was another player. Andre Collins.
Are you still looking
Fireman
for that
John,
guy?
Steve Blake, Drew Nicholas, Dave Dickerson, Lonnie Baxter.
The joys of Wi-Fi, folks.
Good grief! What was that guy's name? I'm trying to like.
Well, let's move on before you get frustrated, before you break your computer, because computers are expensive and we don't want to pay for expensive things.
Chris Wilcox.
There you go. There
that
you go.
That was the name I wanted. We finally got it.
All right, so let's move from college basketball to college football, where the national championship tournament took place, the four-team national championship tournament.
And when we get to that, what a day of bowl games on New Year's Day. It was
Let's not
fun.
Talk about Maryland's Foster Farms Bowl.
No, I said New Year's Day. New Year's Day.
Yeah.
That's the key word right here, the Foster Farms Bowl. Yeah. Randy Etzel, come back next year and improve on that team and get Stephon
quarterback. Diggs. Get a quarterback.
Get a quarterback and get somebody for Stephon Diggs to receive from. So now we go to New Year's Day. What a slew of bowl games. They were just amazing to watch, with the exception of, I believe it was, let me see. No.
Michigan State had a good comeback.
Michigan State had a good comeback against Baylor. How about Baylor saying, oh, we got shafted? Well,
no, you didn't. You got beat by a better quarterback towards the end, and that guy just improved his draft stock.
Like a jock strap, but a draft stock?
There's one
for the highlight reel.
Yeah, there you go.
We're all going crazy right here. I'm blanking on Chris Wilcox, with all apologies to Chris Wilcox, because you were also a key factor in that national championship. And
probably should have been two straight national championship games.
Hey, Chris Wilcox, can you follow us on Twitter, @BSportsFree4all, and we could talk about me accidentally blanking on your name right there.
I don't think he'd like that very much.
I'd love to give an official apology to you right to your face in person, but we can work that out.
No, but Connor Cook for Michigan State had a great comeback against Baylor, and it was, I guess you could say, it's one for the highlight reels in college football in this bowl season. And he just improved his draft stock completely if he decides to go in the 2015 draft. Unlike one former Heisman Trophy winner from 2013, Jameis Winston, who happened to falter in a 59-20 Rose Bowl loss to the second-seeded Oregon Ducks.
There was the exception of the fun game to watch in terms of bowl games. That game, it was fun to watch in the first half. Then at the end of it, you're like, wow, Oregon's really pulling away. Wow, Oregon's really pulling away. And it's like, rest in peace, Florida State?
I think rest in peace the program after that game, because that's just going to put everybody in a down mood. And it makes you wonder, as big of a win as TCU got in their recent bowl game, that they may have gotten shafted on this one.
You think about that, and thanks to Florida State losing in the manner that they did, they proved everybody who was the naysayer to them right by saying, hey, you were barely handling the teams that you were supposed to handle. You're a paper tiger at an undefeated record in the ACC. We really don't think you should be ranked in the top four, but the one case that they really, really had that trumps everybody's argument is they're in a super conference in Division I football. They're undefeated in that super conference. TCU
Big
handled
12, Big 12 doesn't have a championship.
They handled their business in the bowl game, but at the same time, they lost to Baylor. So how is it that they have the same record as Baylor, are co-champions of the Big 12? How would you rank TCU over Baylor? That is the big argument you have to make. I see the argument that, yes, TCU maybe should have been the team that was in instead of Florida State. Ohio State definitely deserved to be in the top four after the performance they put
in
against
the Sugar
Wisconsin.
Bowl.
No, they, and not only the Sugar Bowl. I was talking about before Sugar Bowl. See, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback with everybody's bowl wins and who took care of business and who did not. But Ohio State definitely deserved to be in that top four because of the way they handle Wisconsin with a third-string quarterback.
I know.
And the way they came in and they beat the number one team in the country with a third-string quarterback. They even had a passing touchdown from a wide receiver. And his pass looked better than Arian Foster's.
His pass looked better than any of Jameis Winston's 29 passes that he had against Oregon.
Yeah, so apparently...
And by the way, Marcus Mariota in that game proved that he was the true Heisman winner.
He was definitely the true Heisman winner, and... good luck in the NFL, dude. Hopefully you're going to be very fun to watch in the NFL. I really am looking forward to his NFL career. Hopefully he's not a bust. Please don't be a bust. Don't be a Heisman Trophy winner that's a bust.
Yeah, Troy Smith.
He's not a bust, though, Josh. He wasn't highly touted coming out of the draft.
What about Mark Ingram? Would we put him there yet?
Yeah.
What is it with the Heisman Trophy that causes people to just fall off the wayside once they get to the pros?
Well, except for the last defensive player who won it, Charles Woodson.
Who was the Oklahoma quarterback? Jason White. Jason White was a Heisman winner, and he didn't go anywhere. Eric Crouch was a Heisman winner for Nebraska. Didn't go anywhere.
Now, the one exception I could say to that is Carson Palmer.
True, because
he didn't falter just because of poor play and couldn't get the NFL game. He got the NFL game.
Injury trouble.
But he had trouble with injuries, and there were freak injuries, like people rolling into him before they had the Tom Brady rule. Then you had it to where this year for the Arizona Cardinals, it looks like he's turning his career around. Larry Fitzgerald actually has a decent quarterback throwing to him.
Yep.
And then he goes down and gets hurt. If the Arizona Cardinals had a quarterback, they would be the favorite in the NFC to win the Super Bowl, but lo and behold, they got beat by the Panthers, who a lot of people thought had no business being in the playoffs.
And in the 2005 season, where the Bengals were hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that was the same season where Pittsburgh ended up winning the Super Bowl that year, you could make the case that had Carson Palmer not been injured in that game, he could have taken that Bengals team to the Super Bowl. That's how good the Bengals were during that year.
Yeah, so going back to the national championship now, it's been decided it's going to be Ohio State versus Oregon. I feel bad for people who are living in Ohio, Oregon right now.
So we have an Oregon team that, if my memory serves correctly, has never won a national title.
Has never won a national title and has never beaten a top, I believe it was a top three team.
Yeah, versus an Ohio State team who, despite their obstacles at the quarterback position, going from Braxton Miller to
JT Barrett
to Cardale Jones. You have to kind of root for both of these teams by the thick of things.
I can't root against either team. I like both of them.
I'll tell you what, right now, you got to ask me next episode, because I'm kind of conflicted right now on who I'm going to pick in this game.
Yeah, because
we got to wait for a week to pass.
Yeah, we're going to have another episode before the national championship gets decided, because it's going to be decided on Monday, January 12th. So that's going to be after our next edition of the Baltimore Sports Free for All. That's going to be a fun game to watch. I'm actually, instead of watching what I usually do on Monday nights, which is nothing, I usually am just either reading or doing something else. I will watch this national championship game on Monday night, and I am interested to see who wins this game, who will become the first playoff champion for college football. I will say this, though. You can make the case for TCU, but you can also make the case against TCU going before. It's easy to do it post after the fact, but at the same time, like the argument is, Florida State was undefeated in a super conference. They should be in the playoffs. TCU, they are co-Big 12 champions, but they lost to Baylor. Baylor was ranked ahead of them. You cannot rank TCU over Baylor, because how can you say you're better than one team when you lost to that team? And then you have it to where Baylor lost their bowl game against Michigan State. They didn't deserve to be in there after the fact. It's a tough decision to make, but at the same time, other than that, they got it right this year.
You know what we almost get right on every episode?
Our two-minute rants.
Yep, and I believe
you went first last week, so it's my turn.
Yep, exactly. I'm going to close the show. I'm going to Eric Gagne the show. Hopefully it's Eric Gagne 2002 and not his later career. So.
And not Jim Johnson?
Well, too soon.
Yeah, very too soon.
All right, ready, and go.
Okay, so during the All-State Sugar Bowl, I usually say just a regular Sugar Bowl. As I mentioned earlier in the show, the First Mariner Arena to me has always been the Baltimore Arena, but the All-State Sugar Bowl had a key message during the game. It wasn't the girlfriend who was caught cheating on her boyfriend, so supposedly, as we know, and that's been refuted and not refuted time and time again. I'm talking about during the actual commercial breaks. Every single commercial break, there was a very familiar man in the commercials. Dean Winters, otherwise known as the All-State Mayhem guy. The first-string quarterback. I've had this and I've lost. I'm the guy that had the lighter fluid. I'm your grill. Or all the other things that he's done that are just genius commercials. Those commercials never get old with Dean Winters. The guy is an advertising treasure for Allstate that they've got. And they got him in Serrano. How'd that happen? So, during these commercials, they're telling a story. They do not once mention the name Allstate. They just simply have Dean Winters saying, check out these guys right here. They're tweeting that they're at the game. I'm a known burglar. I'm going to go into the house knowing that there's nobody home. All of a sudden, I'm having a fire sale. And every commercial is him doing like an infomercial for everybody's stuff. See this $1,200 platinum screen TV? It's yours for $90. And he's going around selling off all their stuff. And it's like, all because they put up where they were going in social media. And at the end of it, it finally had it to where Serrano came out and said, you've just watched a realistic scenario. There is more thefts coming from social media nowadays. Be careful what you post out there. And if it happens, talk to an Allstate representative. So it was a commercial with a huge public service announcement that told a great story, and they happened to do it throughout the broadcast. That is an effective way of using advertising revenue and using an advertising slot that you buy. Amazing.
Pedro Serrano's the man. That's all I'm going to say right there.
Easily
the man. Joe Boo. Anyway, my two-minute rant this week is going to be about excuses, especially on social media. On every day on Facebook leading up to the Ravens-Steelers game, I had to look on my Facebook wall and see Steelers friends of mine. Yes, I do have friends who are Steelers fans on my Facebook friend list who were predicting the game before it took place, even with the injury to Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell. The Ravens are going to get their asses kicked. Hey, Ravens fans, I hope you're preparing for a long offseason, yada, yada, yada. Well, of course, if you watched the Saturday AFC wildcard game between the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers, you knew how the outcome went. Ravens 30, Steelers 17. And it was fine and dandy for Baltimore Ravens fans. They got their wish. They got their first win ever against the Pittsburgh Steelers in postseason history. And you would think to yourself, you know, Steelers fans will quiet down a bit. They'll say, good job, team. Way to go. Unfortunately, in this day and age, especially on social media, sportsmanship does not exist anymore. If anything, the one thing that does exist? Excuses. Excuses, excuses. You guys are lucky that Le'Veon Bell didn't play. Otherwise, we would have waxed those asses. Okay, so let me get this straight. The Pittsburgh Steelers 8 penalties for over 110 yards. No, that didn't cause the loss. Oh, wait a minute. Your offensive line getting Roethlisberger sacked 5 times. That didn't cause the loss. Or, not to mention the 2 interceptions and the 1 fumble that the Baltimore Ravens forced against the Steelers. No, that didn't cause the loss. Oh yeah, it was Le'Veon Bell being injured at the running back position. Give me a break. Okay, you made your excuses. Congratulations. Just sit on the sideline. Tell everyone how your Pittsburgh Steelers have 6 rings, because it doesn't matter, because 4 of those rings are dusty as hell, and only your grandfather remembers those years. Oh yeah, by the way, Baltimore has 4 more championships to add to the Ravens' 2 Super Bowl wins.
Well, at the same time, if they had Le'Veon Bell, maybe the game plan would have been a little differently, and Roethlisberger wouldn't have been sacked 5 times.
You can't match that voice, only I can do that.
Was that a knock at my voice there?
Yes, it was. Stop stealing my thunder there.
Well, I'll tell you what. One guy whose thunder I don't think will ever be stolen or duplicated is one SportsCenter anchor, Stuart Scott.
Stuart Scott passed away Sunday at the age of 49 after a long battle with cancer. He was diagnosed in 2007. Everybody watched his Jimmy V speech, and it was just a lightning speech that he had. It was amazing. The guy was smiling all the way to the end. And we all remember he joined ESPN in the early 90s, which is amazing considering the fact that he's 49 years old, so he joined them in his 20s. And I'm looking at the career aspects of Stuart Scott. The man has done lots of things. He's witnessed many memorable moments in sports. He's called many memorable moments in sports. And he's been reporting on just about everything. The guy will live in history. When I think of ESPN, well, glory days of ESPN, since to me, ESPN has lost a lot of its thunder. But to me, Stuart Scott is ESPN. He is the embodiment of what ESPN was meant to be when it launched. And it will not be the same ever again without one Stuart Scott. So, Mr. Scott, you're as cool as the other side of the pillow.
My thoughts on Stuart Scott. You know, when I was in high school, there were 4 anchors from ESPN who I always looked forward to whenever they were on television. There was Dan Patrick, who is a favorite of mine, who does the syndicated Dan Patrick radio show. Scott Van Pelt. Rich Eisen, who is currently head anchor of the NFL Network. And then Stuart Scott. Yes, you can make arguments for all 4, but Stuart Scott brought one thing. He brought enthusiasm. He brought flavor. He brought a pizzazz to a head anchor of a sports network position that nobody can ever match or duplicate. And what was amazing to me about Stuart Scott before ESPN got saturated with LeBron James news and Boston Red Sox news. And
I'll go even further back with Terrell Owens.
Exactly. Terrell Owens news. Thank you, Ray. I always looked forward to whenever my favorite team won a game because I know Stuart Scott was going to be on SportsCenter to hype that game, to hype that team, and to hype that name because he was damn good at it. He made me want to watch SportsCenter because he brought enthusiasm to any game. It could have been the worst game in the history of sports, and he would have found some way to make that game entertaining. And that is one quality of Stuart Scott's that I think will be truly missed. And I will say this. If there is a heaven, I hope Stuart Scott is the head anchor of that Sports Center.
Wow, Sports Center in heaven. I kind of like the sound of that.
Well, when you think of Stuart Scott, he is Sports Center.
That he
hands
is.
Down.
Okay, so this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Rest in peace, Stuart Scott. We will see you next week.